And I think, you know, some of our listeners have heard you use the term, you want to be like, was it the Willy Wonka of sex?
No, I don't want to be the Willy Wonka
of sex. What was it?
Oh, God.
Have a sex toy, we'll try it. Have a fetish, we'll try it. We masturbate and copulate to recreate and educate. We are the Trisexuals.
Welcome to the Trisexuals Podcast. I'm Max Chameleon.
I'm Lily Chameleon.
And we have a special guest today, Marbles the Cat. All right, so today we're going to be talking about something that is very personal to me. And it has a lot to do with actually why we started this podcast and the blog before that. We are going to be talking about my experience of autism and sexuality.
Get your tissues out.
Tissues out? We don't need any tissues.
Oh my goodness. It's.
Do you think anyone's ever masturbated during our show?
You know, I'm sure they probably have.
You know, you said tissues. It just made me think that somebody's sitting there listening to my soft, velvety voice and going...
No, they're listening to my sexual sensuality voice.
And then schlicking the bean?
Yeah, that too. But yeah, so we're going to talk about autism and Asperger's and, you know, Max's experience. And then we'll talk a little bit about my experience being, you know, the partner in all this for the last 12 years.
We need your perspective. But as Julie Chen would say, hashtag butt first.
Shaka!
For the Big Brother fans out there, we are going to talk about what we've been playing with lately. So here's the deal.
Absolutely nothing.
Lily's family has been in town for 10 days. And, I mean, they're out of town now. But during that time, it was very hard to find time to play with anything or to have sex. We did manage to have sex, but we certainly... It was more like maintenance quickie sex and not like, let's have fun and grab the toys. So legitimately, even though they've only been here 10 days, we haven't played with any sex toys for about 2 weeks.
Yeah, I'm very sad. Very, very sad about that, really.
I'm looking forward to getting back into it. I actually was doing good routine with working on my back end and getting toys in, and I stopped that, so that's what I'm looking forward to getting into, and I think I'm going to be playing a lot with my Love Sense hush plug when I do that. What are you going to be getting into, honey?
Oh, my goodness. I have so many things. I'm trying to remember what I have on my backlog. I have stuff from Satisfyer. I have stuff from... Fun Factory, I've got to be playing with.
That's right.
I have a lot of things I need to be doing.
We will probably be doing a Satisfyer giveaway soon, actually. So stay tuned for that. I'm not sure when that's going to come out, but it's going to be soon. I know that our Steronic G giveaway just ended. So yay! Congratulations to the winner. Fun Factory is sending your toy out, and hopefully you will have it soon. Thank you for everyone that participated. It always makes me happy to see how many people sign up for our giveaways and do all the fun things and interact with us.
And thank you for those that signed up for our newsletter, because that makes me happy, because yes, that's what I send out.
Lily is the queen of the newsletter, and she is always the one that puts it together. She does a good job with it. So, you know, thank you, Lily.
Yay. Thank you, Max.
Me.
So, yeah. So, my parents being here, my family.
Yes.
The reason why, listeners, that we didn't really play with too many toys is because my family is very, how do I put this nicely?
Well, Lily's family doesn't get to see us very often throughout the year. They live in a different state. They live in New York, where we're from. And we oftentimes only see them once to twice a year. And because of that, they like to make up for the lack of time that seeing us throughout the rest of the year and spend solid time with us. So when they're here, you know, if Lily and I haven't taken off work like we didn't this last time, then as soon as we got to work, we're rushing over to hang out with them. So there's not really much in the way of spare time. And we try to get away in the evening so we can go to bed. And usually there's just a little bit of time for us to do some maintenance sex before they leave. But Family is a very interesting thing, and we love our family. I want to make that clear from the outside.
I love my parents. I love Max's parents. I love my sister, his sister. I mean,
and as you're gonna hear, like both of her parents have things that make them really great. But we also, it's very difficult when you're involved in this sex positive world and you're running a sex positive podcast and trying to deal with Telegram and all the stuff that we do, review sex toys. And have family around because, well, obviously you don't want to mix family and sex toys. That's
well, there are some people who do, you know, talk about things and being open with their parents. Just like,
that's true. That's
you
true.
Know, just like in the
that's
BDSM world.
That's not what either of our, it's not conducive to either of our family situations.
Right.
So it turns into a bit of like, we have to go back into... you know, old Max and Lily, like before we kind of found our sexual freedom. So
basically putting the genie back in the bottle.
Yeah, we turn ourselves off a bit, so to speak, pun intended, while family is here. And we just kind of live that alternate lifestyle where we're not naked in the apartment all the time. And we don't have sex toys all over the place. And we have to hide all of our... you know, werewolf porn that was hanging on the wall.
Oh my goodness, that's right. And, you know, watching what we type even on our phones because my parents
would
look
over our shoulders and see what's there and then ask us questions on it. And also, I'm pretty sure that your dad saw my bin labeled pegging and prostate. I thought I'd hit it well enough, but...
He's so nosy.
Anyway, so one of the things that we did to help us cope with while family was here, and this was, I think, Lily's idea, actually, was we turned it into a bit of a game, because both of our families, really, Lily's family in particular is very politically opposed to us, or not politically opposed, but like, they're...
We're so different. They're on the other end of the political spectrum than Max and I are.
They're just not ready to hear a lot of this sort of stuff, we'll say.
That's a good way of putting it.
And they like to talk a lot about their political standings. It's a very common subject. A lot of the things they believe in, which science may or may not believe in, gets brought up a lot. Anyway, so help Lily and I cope with this, because certainly, like, correcting them and getting on their case about it or whatever is not really good. It's not really helpful. Lily's idea, we created a bingo card that had different things on it that her family likes to do. When we see my family, we'll do something similar. Little things that would ordinarily be upsetting to us or even piss us off. Put it on the card. We made two separate cards, had it randomized so that Lily had a card, I had a card. And then we would actually mark down as things happen. And instead of it being like, oh my God, you know, I can't believe they said this, we were, you know, very silently cheering to each other. Yeah, I almost got a bingo. That sort
of
thing.
Oh my goodness. And then, of course, I think it was like halfway through their visit, I had already gotten bingo 3 times.
Yeah, I didn't get bingo once. I got a crummy card, apparently. But Lily kept getting it a lot. Anyway, that was a neat survival method. A lot of people in our chat, I think, responded pretty positively to it. We turned it into a positive thing. I have to say, this is, for spending 10 days with your family, this is probably the best visit that we've had. And part of that's because you and I are learning a little bit more about how to, you know, work with our families and get
right.
a little bit more space that we deserve. But also, this game helped us, you know, laugh about things that ordinarily we might be crying about.
That's so very true. And you bring up a good point, because as our listeners, some of you know, I am in therapy. I've been in therapy for the last year and a half, and it's been an amazing experience. And with therapy, it's actually been helping me learn how to set boundaries with my family and, you know, and with Max's family. We're learning a lot more about ourselves, setting boundaries, and it's okay that you don't see them like all the time. For instance,
yeah. Not to feel guilty about that.
Exactly. Like one of the things I said is this particular night I'm going out and doing my pole dancing because my class, I paid for it. I'm going to go. I'm not going to miss something that I love just because family is in town.
That's right. And making that time for ourselves helps us stay sane and helps us love our family more and family love us more.
And it really does. And this actually ties into autism and Asperger's, because this interaction, this social interaction, was so hard to put Max through, because being, you know, autistic and have Asperger's, it's very hard for him to be in a situation like this where my parents didn't want to make plans. They didn't want to, like, plans that we did try and make, they would complain about or change. It's very
hard for me. I like to, I can do one of two modes. Like, I've learned this other mode. Originally, the only mode that I was able to handle was, like, everything needs to be planned out to the T. But I do have another mode where there's no planning, but we're easygoing. Your family falls, like, right in between the two modes that I was able to work myself into. Instead, like, they want us to make plans. They're always like, what are we doing? What are we doing? What are we doing? But then they never want to follow the plan. So it's all kinds of difficult for us.
I completely understand.
In a lot of ways, we end up having to be kind of the adults. When your family's here and we have to make decisions and do things, we're like, oh, so-and-so's getting cranky. We got to make sure we get some food right now.
And actually, my therapist once told me that as you get older, this is kind of the change that happens, that as children, we become the parents almost to our own parents. Yeah. And it's a very normal occurrence as they get older.
Well, we become the masters of our own lives, right? And when we were kids, our parents were very highly involved in our lives. But right now, and especially for you and I, there's so much more that we've become outside of where we're from and where we come from. Mm-hmm. That there's no way that they can understand our life and our position. So it's on us to be in control of that situation. When they are visiting us here, this is our life that we're inviting them into. And so there you go. That's part of why we're in charge. So anyway, long story short, we didn't end up playing with any sex toys then, but we'll be getting back into things real soon. No worries. So now I'd like to talk about sex in an alien world. Now, we talk about all sorts of alien silicone penises and stuff on the show and crazy stuff like that. In this case, I'm actually not talking about that kind of alien. Well, I mean, I guess I kind of am in a way. You see, being an autistic individual, for me, a lot of my life feels like I'm an alien on this planet. And I don't understand a lot of what's going on around me. I had written an article on Carnal Chameleon about this a couple years ago, and it's actually entitled Sex in an Alien World. And one of the things I actually reveal on that write-up is where I picked the name Carnal Chameleon and why that's a character that represents me. So for some of you, this may be review, and I apologize for that. But the reason I chose Carnal Chameleon is because one of the activities that I participate in as an autistic person that's trying to fit into the, let's say, normal world, is chameleoning. So when I am interacting with a certain group of people, like when I go to my vanilla day job or something like that, I have a persona that I put on. It's like a color that a chameleon changes to, and that helps me to cope with social interactions. I pick a persona in my head, and I try to match that, because the way that I would probably act if I acted naturally is not what people would find very conducive to a social environment.
What would that look like?
It depends on how I'm feeling at the time, but you know, and when I was younger, this was something that would happen a lot. I would maybe not talk to anyone. I might be very silent. I'm not going to look anyone in the face, in the eyes or anything like that. I'll be very quiet. If I do have something to say, I'll be direct to the point. And it may come off as being rude. You know, not any of the refined soft edges that I appear to have now. In fact, when I host this podcast, it's a persona, you know. It's not to say that it's not the true me. You know, this is me represented through a persona that I've created to help me cope with hosting this podcast. This is not a natural state for me to be talking into a microphone to a bunch of people. But I have been able to find enjoyment in it, even though every time I go to turn on the mic to record a podcast, I literally start sweating. My mouth goes dry because this is very difficult.
So Max, I know your story, but our listeners really don't. You know, how did you find out you had Asperger's? Tell us your life story.
So there's a lot of it at the beginning I don't quite remember. There's a lot of stuff I wasn't paying attention to, and plus I was really young. I know that I received my diagnosis when I was 7 years old.
7 years old. Can you imagine little Max Chameleon just out of his little egg?
Out of his little egg, yeah. And I acted a lot differently back then, too. In fact, what had tipped my parents off to the idea of me being autistic or why they were seeking doctor's advice on any of this was because of the way that I was acting. My mom had noticed that I didn't interact with kids in the usual way. I wasn't interested in receiving hugs, which may come as a shocker to a lot of people that know me in person now. But I was very uncomfortable with physical touch. I would oftentimes be totally distracted if there was like a small noise or something going on. Like I just literally couldn't focus. And then my mom would notice that I'd be totally obsessed on a particular subject. And I think one of the first things I ever became obsessed about was trains. And I never stopped being obsessed with trains, which is a very common autistic thing to be obsessed about. At some point, my mom took me to see doctors. There's other things going on at the time, too, because a lot of people don't realize I also actually have some hearing trouble. I have permanent ringing in my ears, which can make it difficult to hear certain things.
That's tinnitus, right?
Tinnitus, yeah. That made it... That, on top of having difficulties focusing on things, certainly didn't do me any favors in school. But there was a lot of testing and stuff going on at that time.
So you were saying, you were obviously very young when this happened, 7 years old. And, you know, how did you cope with school? What was the school's reaction? Keep in mind, my listeners, this was back in the 80s and 90s, so they don't know about all the stuff they do now.
So I was in a very small school. It was around 83 kids in my graduating class.
Oh, gosh, that's so tiny.
And that was the largest class to date, I believe. They were getting bigger each year. And this was a relatively new school, too. They didn't know how to handle me. And in fact, for most of my school career, if you want to call it that, I was put into special ed. Now, my mom fought very hard to try to keep me out of special ed. She knew and saw that I had abilities. She could see that, I wasn't just, somebody that wasn't going to be able to function in the world. I would be able to find a way. So, my mom worked very hard with me. And one of the things that she did as I was growing up is she kind of trained me and taught me how to act and appear normal. She explained a lot of things that, how the world works and how I need to appear in order to fit into the world. Now, some of that for autistic children might not be necessary nowadays, but back then it wasn't a very well-known thing, mm-hmm. And it was very important. I'm very thankful for the training my mom gave me. I mean, basically she taught me to be a chameleon is what it comes down to. To give you a little bit more idea of what was going on in school, they had also told my mom that I would never be able to go to college, get a job, or accomplish anything. They said that, Max is, maybe we can teach him a trade, mm-hmm. something like that, and, but he'll probably never be able to live on his own without some sort of assistance. This is how bad it was.
Now, if you know Max and you know us personally and you know his family, you never ever tell them you can't do something.
Yeah, that's true. That may have driven us quite a bit.
Yeah.
So my mom worked very hard in, my school wouldn't let me take advanced placement classes. She, had me drive to another school while I was in high school to take advanced placement classes. So at one point I was, doing the morning at my actual high school. Then I would drive to a different high school that, she got me into to take advanced placement classes. And then from there, I would drive to a community college and start taking college courses to get a head start and also to prove to these people that, hey, I can do it. My school would not write a recommendation for me to apply to colleges. It was crazy. They just, they kept trying to convince my mom it just wasn't going to happen. But she saw the aptitudes I had. So, Yeah. I mean, one of the other things that's going on at school, and this is probably sound crazy by today's standards, but they gave me a one-on-one aide. Now, this was partially to help me out and to keep me focused and that sort of thing, but partially they gave me an aide because they worried a bit that I was going to become violent against the other kids. I had no history of being violent or doing anything like that. In fact, I was beat up quite a lot in school, but they just feared me, and I was actually separated from the other kids, during lunch hour.
And I think a lot of this had to do with, this was during the time of, the first school shooting, Columbine, that was really in mainstream news.
Yeah, that's one thing that not a lot of people know, is when that happened, I can't remember what grade I was in, but the school actually pulled me in and like two other kids into the principal's office. And they asked if we were planning any sort of actions against the school. I'm like, what the hell are you talking about? I don't even think I was aware of Columbine at the time. Mm-hmm. But it like happened earlier that I can't even remember. I didn't pay attention to a lot of stuff in school. I was just trying to get through. But I remember they had pulled, us out to make sure that we weren't planning anything, which is ridiculous. They were just very scared of me.
Which to me sounds completely asinine, because you wouldn't hurt a fly. You are probably the most gentle person ever.
Yeah, I know, but I wasn't necessarily, the easiest to deal with back then.
Or now, sometimes.
I was, disruptive at times, and that's because I just had a hard time fitting in. I never did anything violent or dangerous or anything like that, but, I did, I mentioned this on the podcast I was on earlier. I brought in a battle bot. I thought it was really cool. I built this thing and they considered that a weapon. I got detention for that. A bunch of other things that I did got me in a bunch of trouble. One of my favorite ones though, so permanent records, these things that they keep on you at school.
Yeah.
At one point I had configured the computers at the school in the computer lab. So if you went to print something, it would print off 100 pieces of blank paper. And I was a laser printer, so it's not like we were wasting the paper. With the stuff you have, the dot matrix printers where you have the paper you got to tear off. There wasn't any of that. You could just pick up the blank paper.
Can I just say I miss those things? Just the noise of that printer. I miss that.
But I made it so every time you print, it would do that, right? And it wasn't even that big of a deal. It's not like anyone's going to be late for some big report or something like that. It was, school. Not a big deal. But they had said that what I was doing was wasting paper. It was just ridiculous because you could have taken the blank paper and put it right back in there. Later on, I'd gotten in trouble for something else. This was like a couple years later. And they got out my permanent record. And in that permanent record, kid you not, is hundreds and hundreds blank pieces of paper. And with my history says that, Max was wasting paper. I'm like, you're the ones that wasted it. You just threw it in my goddamn record. And why is that even necessary?
Wow. Sounds kind of like they're like out to get you a little bit.
Well, I don't know if they're out to get me, but certainly their lives would have been a lot easier if Max wasn't involved in it. Let's put it that way.
Oh my goodness.
So now some of you might be asking gosh, he's afraid of hugging and he has these sensory issues where things might be overwhelming. Like, how is it that this autistic person came into a world of sex, and how am I able to handle that? Well, I can tell you when I got my first kiss at 19, that it changed a lot of things, because prior to that, I never thought that I was going to, have sex or have a partner or anything like that. I was not very interested in it. That was a thing that normal people do, and I just, I never needed to do the things that normal people needed to do. I was just focused on working on whatever project I had at the time. And I know projects that Max was working on that weren't sexual. Can you even imagine?
That's such a shocking thought.
But I had received this kiss, and it kind of changed everything in one moment. I had never felt anything like that before, and it spread all over my body. And then it was from that point on, I'm like, oh yeah, now I'm a sexual being. It was
it was like a light got turned on in your brain.
Yeah, once I had sex for the first time, I was like, well, this is the best thing that I can experience in the world, so I want to do that again and again and again. Now, as far as like some of the coping mechanisms for it, and especially when Lily and I started getting into non-monogamy and exploring swinging and all that, it's interesting because unlike with a lot of things in my life that I, you know, new to experiencing, I actually, the sex stuff went over really easy for me. And I think that part of the reason that that's the case is that things like kink and swinging and poly and all these things, even furry, tend to have more defined specific rules on how you interact with one another. Mm-hmm. Even at a furry convention, you're going to have, you know, the culture is that of which you ask to hug, right? Or, you know, just having that set of rules and way to behave is a very comforting thing for me. And I just find that a lot easier to deal with than a lot of other things you deal with in, you know, human behavior.
Like what?
You know, how to handle when somebody is sad. You know, like now I've learned how to deal with when somebody's sad, but I don't by default know what to do. And in fact, when, you know, before I, you know, practiced all the stuff and learned all the stuff from my mom, when somebody was sad, I would just be uncomfortable. Like, why is this, what is this thing that this person is experiencing next to me? And what am I supposed to do about it? Like, I could probably recognize that they were sad, but I didn't have any book in front of me that said, when somebody is sad, these are the things that you do or say, you know?
Mm-hmm, exactly.
And there are, like it or not, there are ways in which our society, you know, finds different ways of acting acceptable or not acceptable in that situation. And everyone else seems to know that by default, and I don't know these things by default. Mm-hmm.
I think for you, it seems like having rules and something you can follow is very important, it seems like.
Well, yeah. The ambiguity is one of the things that puts me in the most discomfort ever. I really want to know what is okay, what's not okay, how to handle things. You know, because if you do that, then everyone's on the same page with things. You can, it's a lot easier to explore different things that way when you have a framework from which to start your exploration from.
Interesting. So when you first started having sex and having significant others, how did you deal with, you know, for them explaining to them that you had Asperger's or that you would have certain times where you were going to be different?
It was something. So that's one thing I actually learned. It's a good question. I learned early on that that's something I want to tell people about. You know, as soon as somebody starts getting close to me in a relationship way or not, friend or not, I like to let them know about that in case there's certain things they notice about me that, you know, seems off or strange. Then they know why, because I am ultimately a chameleon trying to blend in a little bit. And sometimes it's not perfect, and I don't want them to think it has anything to do with them or something they've done wrong. Also, there's certain times, so doing this chameleoning is actually very exhausting, takes up a lot of social strength and energy. So there's certain times that it all kind of shuts down. I just can't sustain it anymore. Now, Lily's seen this a few times. Most people haven't, but I go into like a shutdown mode, and sometimes I'll even go nonverbal. I don't want to talk. I don't want anything. I'm not making facial expressions anymore. It might look like I'm in pain or angry or upset, and I'm not. It's just like, okay, this needs to be shut off for now. It's too much work to sustain, and I need to do something like, well, logical. I can play some video games, usually something that's management style, like SimCity, or, you know, where I get to build stuff or something like that, and just need to chill out like that alone for a bit where I don't have societal expectations on me. And Lily's gotten very good about knowing when those times are and not expecting me to act like a person, for lack of a better term, during those times.
Yeah, it's been a really interesting experience, you know, for the past 12 years learning and being a part of this, because before you, I didn't know anything about autism or Asperger's.
Something, didn't you? You'd gone to school for it.
I had just gotten into psychology when I met
That's
you.
Right. We used to joke around that I was your...
My test subject.
Or your research subject.
Yeah.
You know, one thing that occurs to me is with Pup and Pony Play, that nonverbal sort of thing that people reach when they're in headspace is very similar to... Mm-hmm. When I go into shutdown mode. So if you've experienced something like that, where you don't really desire to talk to someone and instead you're wagging your butt or begging for a treat or stomping your hoof or anything like that, then you probably have a pretty good idea of what it feels like when I reach shutdown mode.
And no, he's not a robot. He really, he does have feelings and everything.
Oh, I do have feelings.
You just don't want to...
I can experience feelings without necessarily... I can sometimes choose if I'm going to display them or not, I suppose, which sounds a bit like I'm a sociopath. Maybe I am. I don't know.
So, you might be. So, you were talking a lot about when you're in shutdown mode or just in general. It seems like... And I know this for a fact, but it seems like logic is a big part for you.
Well, yeah. I love logic. I'm actually a Vulcan. Yeah, logic is extremely important to me. I mean, I don't want to say important. I don't know. Logic makes sense. That's all there is to it. You know, you can map out logic, you can figure out the answer, and everyone's going to come to the same answer based on a problem, you know, if you're employing logic correctly. That's not the case with non-logical systems, I suppose. I should chaotic systems like the ones that Lily tends to operate on.
Well, I think it's also humans in general sometimes act in a very illogical manner.
Yeah, they're a lot like quantum mechanics. You can't really know for sure exactly what's going on.
That is true. And, you know, I've heard you mention, you know, sometimes, like just in passing, you know, with you and I being in a relationship for so long, that sometimes it's hard for you to even read my expressions.
Yeah, I mean, the more I know someone, the more I'll, you know, I get a feel for their facial expressions and their emotions and what they're feeling. And sometimes I can get really good at it to the point of when somebody's trying to hide their emotions, I can detect that more easily than someone else that is typically better at detecting emotions than me. But I'm not as fooled by the fake signs that you throw out there. You know, as I get to know people more, I learn more about their facial expressions and what they're feeling, what that means for them. Every person's different.
You're right. Every person is different. So, you know, talk a little bit, I guess, to our listeners about, you know, how being in a fursuit, how does that make you feel? Like, what is that like for you being, you know, autistic?
Well, firstly, let's start at, you know, I feel that there actually is a connection, at least for me, between furry and autism. And there's a couple different things there that I could talk about. And firstly, and I'm not the first autistic person to notice this, or not the only autistic person, but animals make a lot more sense to me than humans do in their actions. You know, you can... You know, I mean, maybe not necessarily predict, but animals just make a lot more sense to me. They show, like, what they actually mean. They're not hiding their intentions, usually. Their goals are pretty clear. You know, I want to eat, I want this. Well, not I don't necessarily say simple.
I'd say it's more, like, with humans, we're a little bit more complex than we have...
I'll grant you that humans are a little bit more complex.
I mean, look at Marvels. All she wants is food, sleep, and lots of love. It's easy.
And I can understand and respect that. I can't always understand and, you know, respect the way that people act. They seem to act in ways that don't necessarily benefit them sometimes, but it's part of this larger, complex thing. But animals are simple. So one of the things that I do, and I've heard this from other autistic people, including Rain DeGray, when we talked to her, there was a little bit, we talked to her after the podcast and she admitted that she does the same thing, where I assign animal types to people that I'm dealing with to get, it's kind of like a shorthand for understanding their, you know, how that person tends to act. I had a boss once that was a badger, who's very much a badger. You know, there's people that are dogs, are very loyal and friendly, but when they, you know, are threatened or somebody they love is threatened, they become, you know, not aggressive, but they can be very protective.
What's the craziest animal you've ever assigned?
The craziest animal I've ever assigned? Like, or the most unusual?
Most unusual, the most unique. What's the...
So I'd say one of the more interesting ones that I've assigned is a friend of ours who is very lovable, but also kind of frantic at times. I assigned them a... specifically, I don't even know what it's called, but that lizard that runs across the water.
That has his neck or whatever. Yeah.
That's probably the most interesting one, but he's since calmed down a little bit. He might need a reassignment, but
he might. But we'll see. He's in our chat, so we'll have to talk to him to find out more if this is more like him or not.
So that's one thing that I think kind of drew me to furry, and you know, along those lines, things like the animated version of Robin Hood, Disney's Robin Hood, and all those things. You know, Zootopia is a more modern example. And they kind of do that thing where you can tell a character's traits largely by what character or what animal that's chosen for them. So that was a very comfortable thing for me to do. And I love animated movies, like Disney movies and stuff like that. And I can't remember exactly how I came across furry. I know there's some art that I had found, I think done by a honey badger, as it turns out. I think her name was Honey Badger. And she like draws some awesome art, and they were on Furry Muck, and I ended up getting involved in Furry Muck because I wanted to learn more about that. And then I met a bunch of friends online. And by the way, online communication for me is like such a godsend, because you can, all the information that a person's trying to get across is usually right there in the text. And if it's not in the text, they're not expecting you to know it for the most part. You know, there's, you don't necessarily have to read between the lines as much as you do when you're, you know, trying to focus on somebody's, you know, body language or something like that. So I spent a lot of time making really close friends in Furry Muck and online things where a lot of furries tend to hang out. And then I ended up going to my first convention, which happened to be Anthrocon, back in like, gosh, it must have been...
90s?
It was either late 90s... early 2000s, were you something like that. When I went to my first convention, I think I was on summer break, and I drove down there, which was a big deal for me because I'd never really done travel or anything on my own. I decided to drive there, and I stayed in a room with a bunch of people I had only met on the internet. But, you know, for the first time when I went to a furry convention, I really felt at home, and there was a lot of people that were like me, and... I don't know. And when I, especially with getting into fursuiting and that whole thing, you don't have to, when people are in fursuit, they exaggerate their body language, right? They try to make it very easy to understand. So it's easier to understand fursuiters. Mm-hmm. And that's when I really became addicted to hugging too, because hugging is a big thing. And I found it much easier to hug people and interact with people physically when I was in a fursuit.
And what was your first fursuit?
Oh, you know what my first fursuit
was. I know what it is, but our listeners don't.
My first fursuit was a fursuit that I had handmade, and it cost a total of $7 in materials, because back then nobody wanted the green fur. Nowadays, colored fur is very popular. But I made myself a green skunk. And at that time, I actually chose a skunk because I felt, again, that skunks were something that were a little bit misunderstood. You know, people assumed that they were just stinky critters, and as it turns out, skunks only smell when they want to smell, when they're threatened, you know, when they spray. But you know, they're actually pretty interesting and friendly creatures. And of course, green, because green's my favorite color. So yeah, I put together a fursuit that I could unicycle in, because that was a big thing that I liked to do at the time. So Max Skunk, the green unicycle skunk.
Oh my goodness,
skunk.
I do have to say, looking back on it, that fursuit was really kind of cute and adorable.
Well, I'm glad you liked it. But yeah, so that's a big way that in which that ties into things. And now with Lily and I exploring more kink, there's a lot of rules in kink, and that's both good and bad because, you know, I've started to understand the world in such a way that I don't necessarily need rules all the time. But I'd say that a lot of people like me are drawn to the kink world because of there's a word here that I keep forgetting. Protocol.
Yes.
Because of the protocol that's involved in it. And it's, you know, it helps navigate these things. One of the other things I think that works out so well with me and sex and being autistic is that in a way it's kind of like a leveling playing field. When people are experiencing sex, they're going to more simpler, you know, primal things, right? Like sex is something that's easier to understand on this level that's a little bit deeper than, you know, some of the constructs we've created, like Mother's Day or whatever. You know, like not that appreciating your mother isn't part of, like, you know, being a mammal or something like that, because it is, but I'm just saying that, like, sex is, you know, right down there with food, you know, needing food and survival. So during that moment, I find it a lot easier to blend in and quote unquote act natural because there's a lot less expectations on how you act, you know? So yeah. And I think that's why exploring sex from this alien perspective in this alien world has been a great way to interact with all you locals here. One interesting thing I want to mention about how I coped with being autistic and how I felt when I was very young, I can't even tell you how young, but I knew that I was different than the other kids.
Mm-hmm.
I had actually created this construct in my head. Not that I believed it was true, but I invented this planet called Zuccia, which is the planet that I believed that I was from. So I felt like I was, like, wrongly placed on this planet.
Mm-hmm.
And that explains all the differences that I had and why I didn't understand the locals as much. So, you know, Zuccia is, you know, it was kind of a useful thing as a kid to help me describe some of the things and deal with some of the things I was dealing with. And nowadays I kind of see it as this utopian world that I want to build in a way with trisexuals and carnal chameleon. I'm trying to build my own Zuccia and inviting others to it. a place that makes sense and fits people like us. So Lily, tell me what it's like being with a person who's autistic, because you've been with other boyfriends and stuff before. You've had other partners. What is it like having an autistic significant other, now fiancé?
Now fiancé. Because I forget that. We don't use that term very often.
I forget.
Goodness. That's a great question. I have to admit that it's changed over the years. From when we first got together almost 13 years ago to now. You know, because we've both grown and we've both learned a lot of things. I will always remember the first time you told me that when you were explaining Asperger's, where, you know, when a person looks at a forest, you see, you know, you ask a person what's in a forest and you just, like, you can picture a big forest. Whereas if Max looks at a forest, he sees each individual tree and shrub and, you know, the animals that live in the forest. And it's a different way of thinking what makes up a forest.
Yeah. So, like, I think what you're talking about is when I talk about, like, if somebody points to a forest and they say, what's that? And a neurotypical person, and generally, these are all generalizations, this doesn't fit everyone, but in general, would be able to look at a huge grouping of trees and be like, oh, well, that's a forest. For me, my thought process is a little bit different. Somebody points there and then I see a tree, another tree, another tree. Like you said, all the animals, all the things going on. And then I get distracted in my own thoughts. And what's the question again? Like, I have no idea. And then somebody will say, well, that's a forest. And I'll be like, well, how many trees does it take to make a forest? Like, what is the parameters that we're using to define this? But people are just, you know, like, well, okay, just take it easy, Max. Like, obviously, it's just a forest. You can generalize. It's okay. But that's a lot harder for me to do because then I start, well, you know, why isn't, you know, I don't need to get into that. But it's just a lot harder to you know, people just accept those things, and I don't accept them on the face of them necessarily.
And I think that's been the largest part of our my learning curve.
Is learning how pedantic I am?
Oh my God, yes. So, as a significant other, it's been, there have been trials. There have definitely been times where I just throw my hands up and go, oh my God, I cannot deal with this sometimes, because it can be, honestly, and quite frank, it can be very frustrating. But it's also a wonderful experience because...
Well, I get to show you the world from a different perspective. And you get to show me a world from a different perspective.
You really do.
We're a good balance to each other.
And, you know, some ways that, you know, especially when we're arguing or we're having discussion, you get to, you know, I'm peeling back the curtain here a little bit.
Max wins every argument.
No, actually, he doesn't.
Max wins every single argument ever.
No. No, but he does, with dealing with, you know, at least in my case, it's been learning how pedantic he can be and learning that you have to be, if you're going to make a statement of something, you have to be accurate in your statement. You, like, for instance, if you're saying, oh, you said this, you really need to know exactly what the person said, because if it's off even by like a tiny little bit, that little bit can change the whole argument. It can be a little hard at times, because you do obsess on things, but at the same time, I love when you obsess on different things, because I learned so much that I never knew before. Like when you got obsessed about wanting to do sewing or something. Yeah. I, you know, and this is something that I've learned, is that, you know, being with a person that's autistic, you know, and with Asperger's, there are going to be times where you need a break too, sometimes. Yeah. And that's when I go watch my crap TV or whatever. And then it's just, it's a different experience seeing how Max changes. For instance, when we, you know, are out with friends, when we first got together, he would always look to me.
I still do that. Are you kidding me?
You still do?
In any sort of social situation, I'm far more comfortable if Lily is there with me. And that's because I understand her facial expressions and I can read a lot off of her and how I'm supposed to act in it. Without her there, I feel untethered sometimes. And I can work it out. Like, obviously, Lily's not hanging out with me at my day job, you know, helping interpret everything. But, you know, when it comes to especially new experiences, like having Lily there makes me way comfortable, way more comfortable.
And I can see the difference in stress levels with that. And it really helps if you're, you know, open to your partner or friend who has Asperger's and autistic. And sometimes they're just having a hard time and you just have to hand them like a video game or something. And it's not that they're trying to ignore you or they're trying to get away from you. Well,
sometimes I focus a lot better when I have something to distract part of my brain and I can listen a little bit better.
It's kind of like having those fidget spinners.
Oh, the fidget spinners were very... I know the fidget spinners are a big joke, but they helped me, you know. Mm-hmm. And I've used them before, like on calls and stuff, just to like fidget with that. That was actually a big help for me. I should probably... You know, Krav actually gifted us fidget cubes that I use from time to time when I'm feeling that way. So that's a good thing to have. I have to think a lot about how things I say and do might affect the larger picture. I guess it's true of any relationship. Mm-hmm. But sometimes I might be inclined to say something that, you know, might be logically, you know, acceptable and true. But there's so many things attached to it, the way that you say it, who you're looking at when you say something, how you're looking, you know, all these things mm-hmm. are factors that people tend to take in. So I've been able to learn a lot by studying Lily.
And actually, you were just doing something in person that I actually take a little bit for granted these days, is you do look into my eyes a lot.
You notice that, huh?
And yeah, of course I
don't do that for most people.
You really do. And it's something I, you know, just listening to you, that I do take for granted. That I remember when we first started dating, you hated looking into my eyes. I always thought you were looking like away from me when you talked.
No, and it wasn't that I didn't want to look at you. I just, you know, I didn't want to look at you.
Right. It's hard. It's really, really hard. And I think in this world, everybody is unique. Everybody's different. And I'm learning so much more every day about Asperger's, about autism, about how to be, and even my own self with going into therapy. And they know that you have Asperger's, and, you know, being able to be a better partner.
The thing that keeps coming up to my mind is I'm starting to wonder as time goes on, if autism / Asperger's is really a real thing. You know, like people talk about it like it's a disorder and, you know, whatever. But part of me almost wonders if it's just, you know, everyone's on the spectrum somewhere. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? It's not something where here's just people that are on the spectrum. It's everyone's on the spectrum. Because there's even the most neurotypical person I can think of has moments where, to me, they have autistic moments. No better way to say it. So, you know, maybe one day we'll find that that's just it. And I'm just happen to be over on this side of the spectrum. And so's over on this side of the spectrum. But, you know, certainly I'm not alone in a lot of the things. Despite what it may seem like, I'm not alone in a lot of my feelings and understanding how the world works. We have a few questions from listeners to the show. I think, why don't we go to our sponsor real quick, and then I'll answer those. Hey, Sexplorers. I'm really excited to talk to you today about a truly exceptional sex toy shop, Vibrant. Located at bevibrant.com, Vibrant has a commitment to inclusivity with a sex-positive and education-forward approach. As the Trisexuals, we love to recommend Vibrant. We can be sure that each and every toy that they carry is of high quality and is 100% body safe. You simply can't go wrong. Vibrant is also backed by Planned Parenthood of the Rocky Mountains. How cool is that? As fans of the show, you'll receive 20% off your order at bevibrant.com when using the code TRISEXUALS at checkout. That's TRYSEXUALS. That's bevibrant.com. And use the code TRISEXUALS at checkout to get 20% off your body-safe toys. Thank you to Vibrant for supporting the Trisexuals and making the sex-positive world a better place. Thank you, Vibrant. And don't forget, if you're interested in sponsoring us or having their ad read on the show, contact us. All right, now a question on autism from some of our listeners. So we had Doodle, who asked, can you discuss possibly how autism affects what gets discussed in your negotiations? Now, I assume these are like BDSM kink negotiations.
Could also be swinging, too.
That's a good point. Yeah, that's a good point. So one of the things that I think comes up a lot, I don't really go into all the details of my past history of autism stuff when I'm talking to a play partner. But one of the things that I think is most important for someone to understand who knows me, play partner or not, is those shutdown times. Because during those times, I can appear to fall off the face of the earth entirely. And this seems very concerning to people, because one day I might be talking to them and everything's friendly and happy, and then they don't hear from me for like 5 days in a row. This happened just recently, actually. Right after your parents left, I disappeared for a few days. And a number of people that are used to hearing from me, were concerned. You know, so that's one of the things. And that can happen during a scene, potentially. You know, go... Right. Totally nonverbal during scene. Actually, I think I've been lucky enough that it's not happened, but it's always something that I feel could happen. So that's one of the things that I always bring up. I'd like to think that maybe my oversensitivity due to autism explains why I don't like my nipples played with so harshly. But really, I think I'm just a pansy when it comes to that. I'm pansy nipples.
Pansy poop or pansy nipples.
No, I mean, it probably does factor in, right? That's like nipples are way overstimulating for me. You know, so like that's one of the things I would tell people about. Other than that, I don't think it really comes up much in negotiations for sex. Devothapsis wants to know how I deal with shutdown during sexual situations, especially for people or you know, for folks that become nonverbal during them. I don't really have a good answer for this. I think that communication, as with a lot of things, is key mm-hmm. here. If that's a possibility of going nonverbal, autistic or not, that's something that should come up during the discussion ahead of time. And oftentimes, people reaching some sort of headspace, that's something that can happen. So you want to make sure that your aftercare is talked about ahead of time. As far as maybe for things such as, you know, if it's your partner or something like that, again, communication, you want to let them know, you know, before that this could happen and after, if it does happen, you know, I would go into a debrief about what you were feeling, help them to understand, you know, people generally understand with autism where you're coming from if you explain it. You know, these are the things that I'm feeling. You know, it's easy for people to understand what overstimulation feels like, you know, even if it's something that you don't experience. When I say, you know, I put on an itchy sweater and I feel like I have ants crawling all over me and like all mm-hmm. the feeling makes it hard to concentrate, it doesn't matter if that's the same thing the other person goes through, they can understand that. So, you know, just try to put it in terms that the neurotypical person can understand. One of our readers, Darkness, wanted us to talk about maybe some of the positive sides of having autism has. Well, we kind of touched upon this a little bit. I do think that, you know, well, it's a double-edged sword, but my bouts of obsession mm-hmm. can be really great or they can be really detrimental. Now, if I'm in a situation where I have a certain amount of freedom on what I'm doing, then that's really great. Or if my obsession happens to line up with whatever I'm doing at the point, like let's say I'm in school having to learn a particular subject and I dive deep into that, that's really great. If it's like often is the case, there's mm-hmm. a bunch of stuff that I need to be doing at work, but I'm now obsessing on roller coasters, which is one of the things that I obsess about frequently. Well, guess what? My work isn't going to be that great. And every moment that I spend not thinking about roller coasters or looking up things on roller coasters is kind of like agony to me, right? Mm-hmm. But these obsessions have allowed me to get involved in so many things, not the least of which is this podcast. This podcast is the result of an obsession that I had to have a podcast. Without that drive and diving into it that deep, I probably would have never have done it, right? It's that sort of project that's easy to push off because you're like, well, I could record a podcast right now, but I don't have the right mic and I don't really know where to release it and I've got other work to do.
And this is where I step in and I support you. Cool. I help you sometimes be like, okay, you want to obsess over roller coasters? Okay.
Yeah, Lily will step in if it becomes too much or anything like that. So it's like a healthy yeah. amount of me diving into something. But, you know, obsession is one of those things that can be really good. You know, mm-hmm. you want the people that are designing the safety features of, you know, a spacecraft or an aircraft to obsess over that. You don't want them half-assing that sort of thing, right? When you have somebody that's creating a new project, you want them to be obsessed with that project. But, you know, that makes it sometimes hard for me to deal with my other social obligations.
And that just reminded me that, you know, as some of our listeners have heard you say before, that you want to be the Walt Disney of sex.
Walt Disney is a man that I respect majorly. And, you know, I think that the world that he was trying to create and the experience he was trying to create for the average person to come to his park. But as some people might know, he was also trying to create, like, you know, the city of tomorrow with Epcot, that sort of thing. He has a real vision that I respect. And I basically want to be that for sex. I want to be the guy that draws people in with entertainment, but then teaches them a bunch of stuff once they're there.
I love that. And I'm pretty sure that's kind of like our mission statement for the trisexuals, actually.
It's not just spreading your legs and opening your mind?
I mean, that's our coin phrase.
Darkness also wanted us to touch on, you know, how autism is such a broad term now, and wanted us to talk a little bit about the different kinds. This is probably where Lily could help us a little bit more. I know that, you know, what I have And what I was diagnosed with is Asperger's. From what I understand, or sometimes pronounced Asperger's, I'm actually not sure how it's supposed to be pronounced. It's one of those two. Mm-hmm. I believe that nowadays that's not even in the DSM like that anymore.
No, it actually got removed from the between the DSM-4 to the DSM-5.
So technically we're using an outdated term here, but I tend to, I mean, when I was given that diagnosis when I was young, I'm going to stick to that diagnosis because it's too hard for me to change. But I believe it now falls under spectrum disorder, right?
It does. And, you know, for our listeners that may not know what when we say the word DSM, it's actually the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual. So it's for psychologists and in psychology to...
It's what they actually use to determine what diagnosis to give a person.
Thank you.
It gives the traits and characteristics of it. And though it's not the end-all, be-all to everything, you know, it doesn't necessarily mean if it's not in the DSM, it doesn't exist. Because the DSM is an evolving, as it should be, piece of work. As there more stuff is discovered and understood. You know, one of the changes I believe that took place more famously recently is the change of multiple personality disorder to dissociative disorder. Mm-hmm. Right? Is that one of the ones that happened?
And the other one with being, I think there was also a couple other ones.
Yeah, so this is something that, you know, is as with anything, updating is good. You know, we're never going to have the full answer to any of these things. So it's good that we keep moving forward on it. So what have you got for us?
So with the Asperger's and the DSM-5, even though it's been removed from the DSM-5, that diagnosis of Asperger's itself remains only with a new label in the DSM-5. It's called Social Communication Disorder as a mild form of autism spectrum disorder.
Okay, well that makes sense. I mean,
so to kind of break it down, I guess you have the autism spectrum disorder, which is pretty wide, and then you have the social communication disorder, which actually makes a lot of sense for you, you know, for you.
The communication is what it comes down to a lot. If it weren't for the communication, there's not a lot of things that I would really consider so much detriment about it. Except for if you're talking about like the, you know, I get really distracted by sensory stuff, you know, like sounds, if a room smells a particular way or whatever, it's entirely distracting. I won't be able to focus.
Yeah, it's basically, from what I'm reading, it is meant to apply to individuals who have deficits in the social use of language, but do not have the restricted interest or repetitive behavior that you see in autism spectrum disorders.
But I definitely do have repetitive behaviors. I mean, not all the time.
Not all the time, but I think, you know, there's a spectrum.
There's a spectrum. How about that?
I know. It's crazy. So it's interesting. And, you know, even just in our lifetime, this has changed so much in the DSM, you know, learning about autism, learning about Asperger's, and, you know, learning that it's not something you should be ashamed of.
Ah, so while we were sitting here, we actually got another question about autism from Big Otis on Twitter. And they ask, I'd be curious how hard it was for him to lose his virginity, as in the experience itself, and if anything is ever too overwhelming. Oh, thank you, Big Otis, for the question. So losing my virginity was, I actually don't remember it too well. Not because I was drinking or anything like that, Lily. I see the face that you're making. It was such a long time ago. What?
Mine was longer ago than yours, and I still remember my first time.
Yeah, but I have shit for memory.
That is true.
But, you know, I remember it was my first girlfriend. And, you know, it was a very stressful thing because I didn't know, you know, all the ins and outs, so to speak, of how sex really worked. I hadn't really seen much porn or anything like that even at that point, except for maybe furry porn. No, actually at that age I probably hadn't come across furry porn much, but the one bonus I did have going for me is I actually was, before I'd ever actually had sex, I had actually talked about sex quite a bit because I actually went to a thing called Peer Educators, where I was trained to be a sex educator for children of the same age as me. So I learned all about condoms and how to put them on and
putting them over a watermelon.
Yeah,
right?
And you pick up, yeah, well, you put them over a watermelon to prove that it won't rip the condom and that whole thing. But I picked up a bit of information on sex, but still, you know, it was a very unusual, precarious situation for someone like me to be participating in. But you know, I think I probably had some of the usual problems. I probably, you know, was so nervous, it was hard getting hard. And then once I got hard, I probably came, like, right away. I do remember that I was worried about my parents finding the condom, even in the garbage. And I knew that you didn't want to flush it, because that turns into a big mess. So I had actually put the condom in an old VHS tape thing to take care of later, and I'd forgotten about it for like months and months and came across
it. Oh, that's
later.
So nasty.
I know, it was really gross, but you know, I was just worried they were going to come across it, so you know
I think we all do crazy things, you know, when you're trying to hide condoms or some stuff. Yeah. Because I know with my first times, you find interesting ways of hiding condoms.
I remember a lot more of my first time without a condom. That, because that was an experience like I'd never had before. And I didn't get to come inside of her because she, I think she was doing two methods at the time. She was doing birth control and condom, but she just wouldn't, mm-hmm. leave it at just the pill. So, but she, like, I guess at one point she was like, I don't care anymore. And like,
no shit.
Yeah.
First time I'm hearing about this one.
Yeah. We were in a hot tub, I think. And her dad walked in on us.
No kidding.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Why are you out of breath? Oh, no. I'm good. It's asthma. It's asthma in this hot tub. It's way too hot for me.
Oh, God.
Anyway, let's move on to the Define This segment. So, before we close this off, if you have any questions about autism or sex and anything like that, you know, be sure to reach out to me. I don't necessarily even have to answer it on the show. It's I'm very comfortable talking about it. It doesn't bother me or offend me, so feel free to ask me questions on it. I'm not afraid to answer them.
You know, and if you have friends or family or even your own children that might be going through, you know, something similar, just ask away. We're here.
All right, it is time now for the Define This segment. This is the section where a listener suggests a phrase from Urban Dictionary, and we try to guess what it is. And today's word is brought to us by Jax Sentinel.
Thank you, Jax.
And the word is Gilroy.
I think the exact term is the Gilroy.
Oh, the Gilroy.
The Gilroy.
I actually have no idea. All I can think of is gills, but gills have two L's in it, doesn't it? Like fish for gills?
Yeah, two L's, yeah.
Gilroy. I mean, maybe I'm thinking like... So there's Kilroy, which was that World War II dude that was like drawn on all the tanks that has the nose sort of thing. Actually, I'm going to run with this. So here's my idea on a Gilroy. Gilroy is when you try to do a Kilroy face, which is, again, that head with the big nose that hangs over the table and he's got his little hands. But you do it with a penis. So you actually put your hands on the edge, and then you put your penis over the edge to look like Kilroy's nose, and that's a Gilroy. I'm not sure what the gill has to do with it.
Gilroy. I like yours. I think the Gilroy is when you are underwater and giving a blowjob, going off of your gills.
You've done that before. It's not easy.
No, it's really hard. It's actually really, really, really hard.
What was challenging about it?
Let's see. It's probably the fact that you're, you know, trying not to lose your air, but you're also like, at the same time and moaning and trying not to drown.
All right. So what the Gilroy actually means is a highly concentrated pheromone, usually found in cologne or perfume when applied to the nape of the neck. Even in minuscule amounts, the scent will cause the opposite sex to become incredibly aroused with sexual passion and desire.
Interesting.
Oh. It's actually pretty tame. I was expecting something crazier than that.
I was too.
So Gilroy is basically like the Spanish fly. Or maybe it's more like Love Potion number 9 or something like that.
Yeah. Love Potion number 9 sounds more accurate.
In Ocean's 13, the Gilroy is when Matt Damon's character, Linus Caldwell, posing as Lenny Pepperidge in disguise, sets up Ellen Barkin's character, Abigail Sponder, for seduction and consequently ends up stealing the diamonds. Do you remember that from Ocean's 13? Pepperidge Farm remembers.
That was a good one.
Do you remember when this podcast had a point? Pepperidge Farm remembers. All right, well, thank you again, Jax, for your suggestion. If you have a word you'd like to suggest to us, let us know. It's fun.
It really is.
And you can play at home with yourself. Friends. Oh. What are friends? I don't have those.
Yes, you do. You totally
also have. I want to know if you masturbate during the podcast. Let us know. I'd like to hear about that.
I'm actually really curious how many people actually do
have done this. Yeah. Masturbating while listening to this. Are you masturbating right now? Oh, I know who you are.
What about now?
Yeah, I see you there touching yourself,
flicking the bean.
So on that note, you've been listening to the Trisexuals Podcast. Remember to rate us on iTunes. Tell your friends about the podcast. Join us on Twitter, Instagram, and Telegram. Be sure to reach out if you are a model and like to do a pinup / shout out for the show. Stay tuned because we're going to be doing some more giveaways coming up here. Congratulations to the person that won the Fun Factory Stronic Gene. Links and other information can be found in the show notes. I'm Max Chameleon. I may be special ed, but I'm super advanced in bed.
And I'm Lily Chameleon, or you could say I was head of the class, but really, I just gave head to the whole class.
That's my love.
Oh, I'm such a slut. I love it.
Bye.
Bye. Love you guys. Now.
No! Enough with the fire!